How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
Oh, you know, great. Still great.
Living the vida,
great.
Rona. Yep, I know.
Yeah, again, mm-hmm. I tell you. I just...
It's Groundhog Day, but thankfully, we have the podcast to keep us distracted.
I am thankful for that. It does give me something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was excited because I was like, ooh, we're going to record at noon. Yay. Like, it gives me something to look forward to.
All right. But what do you have for us? Let's not talk about the Rona.
Okay. Let's dive right in. This is a case based out of Canada. Our Canadian friends up there.
Do you want to tell everybody why you picked the case?
Because I have a crush on the detective. You don't need to say that out loud, Jen. That was a secret.
I didn't say it out loud. You did. I just asked
I know,
you if you
but
wanted
I told
to do
you
it. And you said, yeah, I'll do it.
He's cute. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. He doesn't, whatever. Anyway.
FYI, if you haven't noticed, Camille loves everybody.
She
thinks everybody's cute. Well, there's nothing
because
wrong
because you
with
have
that
to get to know them. If you,
you
get to know people, then you appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. But here we go. You ready?
Yep. Let's go.
So, Jen, you remember in the summer when you were a kid, we grew up in a small town, as we've talked about before. And
mm-hmm.
one of the highlights of those summers, especially like on a Saturday night, parents didn't have to get up the next day, was you would go outside and you'd play, you know, you'd get on your banana seat bicycle with the
mm-hmm.
little tassels. And if you were the girl, you had the white plastic basket with the little plastic flowers. You remember that?
Yep.
We would do that. I mean, my kids never got that kind of growing up, which I regret because we did. And that's been, you know, huge. So that's how the story starts off. It's a Saturday summer evening and three little kids go to play nearby their house. And they go to this little area where there's a pond, a small wooded area, but it's got a little pond in it. They're catching critters, tadpoles, you know, getting dirty. It's like the best part of summer.
Love right? that kind of summer. Yes.
Stay out till the sun goes down. You see the lightning bugs or fireflies. We call
mm-hmm.
them lightning bugs here. This is what is happening. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's June 4th, 1995 in Fredericton, New Brunswick, when 8-year-old Jackie Clark goes missing. But is so often the case. Not all is what it seems. Jackie, along with two friends, were playing in and around an area called Frog Pond. And Frog Pond is like kind of in the woods behind their house, like I just said.
Mm-hmm.
That evening, when Jackie didn't come home, her mother called one of the parents of her friends and said, you know, Jackie's not home yet. Is she over there with you guys by chance? And hope turned to fear as the parent said, you know, not only is Jackie not here, but my son's been home for hours.
Hmm.
So the parent obviously is pretty freaked out, you know, the parent of the little boy. She goes up to question her little boy. And the boy tells the mom that, you know, Jackie wandered off through the woods. We're all playing and she just wandered off through the woods. And we all thought she was going home. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mom thought that was really weird. And she thought her kid was acting a little weird. So, you know, like we do, because, you know, kids can lie sometimes and we see through it like there's no tomorrow. She kept pressing her son. And then her son finally fessed up that Jackie actually didn't wander off in the woods, but the stranger had come up on this really cool ATV motorcycle bike and asked Jackie if she wanted to go for a ride. And Jackie said yes.
Oh, Jackie.
So Jackie hopped on the ATV and left with the man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Parents.
That makes me sad. Yeah.
Of the little boy freak out. And I get it. You know, asking the little boy, he's like, I was afraid we'd get in trouble. I was afraid Jackie'd get in trouble. And that's what you think, right? You don't, as a little kid, little 8-year-old, 7-year-old, you don't think that, you don't realize the evil that's in the world, you know?
Right. You just don't want to get in trouble.
You just don't.
Right. Or get your friend in trouble.
So the parents pack up the little boy. They race to the police station. So the officer called in to work on the case is a person, man, by the name of Sergeant Mike Richard.
Now, this is the one you like, right?
Thanks, Jen. That's one.
Your new boyfriend?
My new boy, my future fifth husband. Now, he actually was the uncle of that little boy with the parents. So his sister is the mother of the little boy that was playing with Jackie.
Gotcha. Okay.
Little boy's name is Matt. So Matt was playing with Jackie that day. As Sergeant Richard walks in, he's like, whoa, what are you guys doing here? You know, which you would think you've been called in to work regarding a missing little girl and you see your nephew and your sister there.
Right.
So Sergeant Richard goes to the little boy who is his nephew and he tries to get as much information from the little boy as possible. He also says, hey, do you think you can get a pretty good sketch? And the little boy is, of course, gives him a sketch. Now, we did an earlier episode with a sketch artist, but the sketch artist said that children really do remember, they bring back the most details because they don't get bogged down with a lot of the extra stuff, right? So they can recall memories much more clear because it's just, they don't have as many, I guess, right?
Okay, yeah. Makes sense, I guess.
So the boy described the man as a guy with a little chunky, he had a bearded face, and he was on the ATV, so he had a helmet on. Well, he did give a really good description, but he did have a helmet on. So that kind of, you know, you have a helmet, you do have a beard, though. Immediately, a search was launched near the pond area, as well as all the surrounding woods. You know how they start in the middle, and they kind of go out in a circle. Now, the woods were pretty dense, but volunteers came out from everywhere to do what they needed to do to help find Jackie. There was a headquarters station that was set up nearby with police officers working the tip lines and trying to find out just what happened and where is little Jackie. This is heartbreaking. So they're working the tip lines, and it's not too long that a 911 call comes in, and it takes police to the opposite direction of where they had been searching. They had been searching around Frog Pond because that's what Matt and the children, that's where they were all playing.
Right.
So they rush out to talk to the man who had placed the phone call. The man tells them that he was sitting inside his home when he heard a young girl crying outside. He went out to look around, and off to the side of his house, sitting slightly in the woods, was a young girl. She was like sitting on the ground. She had her legs brought up to her chest, kind of with her arms around them, you know, clutching them sort of. And the man had tried to ask her a few questions, and she was crying so hard she couldn't really answer. So the man was like, stay here, don't go anywhere. And he went inside his house and he called police. Now, when he came back, she was gone. Now, the man would be able to provide a description to police officers that sounded like it might be Jackie, right? So they're hopeful, thinking that this little girl was still alive and now maybe she was lost in the woods. The one interesting thing that he said was that he had recalled seeing a man on an ATV with a girl, and the girl was crying, but they went through like a culvert and she was getting splashed with water. So he had thought that that was the problem, that she was crying because she got, you know, wet. She's a little girl. The description of this little girl kind of did fit Jackie. So at this point, police are, they're happy. They're like, she's alive. She's just lost. We got to go find her. So police come in, they take over, search team hits the area, they look high and low for the little girl, and they come back with nothing, not even a clue, nothing. So they're desperate, not defeated though. They decide to go back to the original location in which they were first searching, which was where Jackie had last been seen getting on the ATV. Police at this time head over to Jackie's mom's house, and they question her. She tells them that Jackie would never get on an ATV with a stranger, as she had been taught not to do that. That is just not in her personality. There's no way, right? As they're talking, a man pulls up in a car. He gets out. He's kind of a bigger fella. He's got a beard. And officers, their interest is kind of piqued, right? They're like, who's this? And as we all know, Jen, sadly, the killer often is someone that's close to the victim.
Usually.
The man comes in. he identifies himself as Bruce, and Bruce is married to Jackie's mom. They question the man, and he's pissed off, you know? He's like, he was out looking for Jackie, who is his stepdaughter at this point. Mm-hmm. And the police are like, hey, listen, you know, we're just trying to clear you out. If you can give us some, you know, some information, maybe let us take your picture, because, you know, those other boys had seen the man. We'll let you go. So he's a little bit perturbed, but mm-hmm. he consents. Yeah, take my photo. With the photo in hand, Sergeant Richard races to his nephew's house to show the photo to the little boy to see if, in fact, that was the man that he saw driving the ATV. The young boy said, I don't think so, but I can't be 100% sure. I mean, he's a kid. He's 7.
Right.
So, of course, they're a little irked, right? Because whatever. They were upset. So they're like, okay, this obviously isn't the guy. So kind of going back to square one, they're kind of taking a breather, trying to figure out stuff. So the police officers are still working the tip line. So there's a tip that comes in. A man had called in and he said, you know, there's a guy that lives by me in this trailer park and you need to come check him out. And he said that, you know, I really think you need to investigate him. So detectives are like, okay. So they go to the trailer park and they're kind of thrown off because immediately they notice just how close it is to Frog Pond and the woods, like walking distance close. As they're pulling in to, you know, approach this man that they were given a lead on, they notice that he has an ATV parked right outside his trailer.
An ATV, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So officers knock on the door, and it's answered by a woman, and they ask if the ATV outside, is that yours? And she says no, but hold on, and she yells back to the back of the trailer and, you know, indicating that it was the person that was in the trailer with her. A man enters the room, and he's a bigger fella, and he's got a beard, right? So officers are like, hey, you know, we're just casing the area. Don't know if you've heard about this little girl that's missing, but we, you know, we need to check some things out. So what's your name? He tells officers his name is Murray Lyons. So then they ask, hey, that ATV outside, does that belong to you? And he says, yeah, it does. And then police ask, well, when did you last take it out? And he tells them, well, you know, it's been a long while because it's been broken down. Officers then ask where he was the night before, and he tells them that he was outside working on the bike. He was home all night just working on the bike. Officers thank the man, and, you know, they're getting ready to leave. And then they're like, hey, by the way, can we get a photo of you before we leave?
Pretty smart.
Murray's hesitant, and he's like, yeah, I don't think so. And then his wife is like, honey. This is in regards to that little girl. You need to help them. So he finally relents and he does it. He does, you know, stand there for a photo. You know where it's going, Jen?
I think I do. I think Murray's got some explaining to do.
He does have some explaining to do.
Mm-hmm.
So again, officers take the photo to the little boy's house and they're going to, you know, ask him if he recognizes the man in the photo. They put the photo down in front of him. The look of fright on the young boy's face tells them exactly what his mouth cannot. This is the man who took little Jackie.
Bastard.
Officers race back to the trailer and they arrest Murray Lyons for the abduction of Jackie Clark. Now, what they need to know now is to find her. Where is she?
I bet you that man was so pissed off at his wife for making him take the photograph.
Take the picture. I'm really kind of surprised he did, honestly. But mm-hmm. I guess he was just thinking, I don't know, these criminals are stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Detectives dig in. They pull him in, and they're going to put the pressure on Murray Lyons, right? Now, Murray Lyons is claiming he doesn't know Jackie.
Because he's lying.
Murray Lyons has also never been arrested. He doesn't have a police record. He's never been in trouble, which is a little odd at this age because he's approaching 40, I would say. So they keep him in there and they're really, you know, just going at him. Hours pass when finally he says, you know, right? You know, I may have taken that bike out last night, you know, just to see if it worked. But I didn't go anywhere. I didn't see any girl. I just drove around this area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said earlier, that area is in literally his backyard. So they kind of lie to him a little bit just to see where, you know, it's going to get to where it's going to go. So they're going to try this little tactic, the old bluff it till you get what you want trick.
Mm-hmm.
They tell him, you know, she was on your bike. And not only that, but we have a witness that saw her on the ATV with you and she was screaming. Now, that's true, because they did have that man, but it wasn't for sure Jackie, but they kind of placed that with him. You know what
right.
I mean?
Mm-hmm. They're allowed to do that.
Immediately, the sweat starts pouring off Murray. He's tweaking. All right. So he thinks he's kind of caught. So he needs to, as they always do, they always admit a little bit, but not quite all of it. Right. So he says, oh, you know, I was out on my bike and, you know, maybe I did give her a ride home. I'm not quite sure. Now, you either did or you didn't. You know what I'm saying? So Murray finally says, he breaks down. He says, yes. Okay. Yeah. You know, I think I did pick her up. She wanted to go for a ride. Of course she did. That's what they tell themselves. But I dropped her off right where I picked her up, and it was in the middle of the woods. Now, there's a couple things about that. She's a little girl. She's 7. It's dark. You're not going to drop a 7-year-old in the middle of the woods dark.
No.
Okay? That's just not going to happen. Also, they have searched those woods inside out. They never found her. She wasn't there.
He's a liar.
Officers know that he is lying. Thanks, Jen. That's what I wrote. Officers know he's lying, but they need to get him to break. So as he's being interrogated, the news that they did not want to hear comes across. And you know what that is.
They found her.
After 2 days of searching, 8-year-old Jackie Clark's body had been found in the woods between Frog Pond and the trailer home of Murray Lyons. Jackie had been brutally raped and strangled to death.
Horrible. That poor baby.
Her body was kind of under some brush. This is the hard part where I'm going to try not to cry. That's why they didn't see her, because he like tried to conceal her, right? And at the point when they were first looking for her, they thought she was alive.
No regard for her. She was just bastard.
So initially, of course, they were hoping this was an abduction case, but now it's a first degree murder case. They were able to collect some DNA from Jackie's little body. Murray Lyons was still maintaining that he did not do it. He simply dropped her off. So someone else must have raped and murdered her. I didn't do anything. I just left her in the woods, right? Police are like, okay, yeah, right, buddy. Just go ahead and give us a blood sample and you'll be cleared. And he looks at them in the eye and he says, yeah, I'm not going to do that. It was June of 1985 at this time. Now, June of 85. So we were going to be sophomores. It was the summer after our freshman year. Now, at that time, without consent, and this is Canada, too, you could not get a DNA sample. Like, you could not just say, we have to take it. Like, you had to consent to give it, right?
Right.
And he's like, not happening. You couldn't just forcibly take it like they can do now. Like, if they suspect you, it's like, hey, you got to do this, right? So without confessing or consent to give some DNA from him, the law dictated that they had to let him go. They could only hold him for 24 hours. After the 24 hours, or at that 24-hour mark, you had to go to a judge and say, you know, we need to bring charges or he has to go, right? Now, knowing that he did it and proving it, as we know, are two very different things. Sometimes, Jan, the little stars align. The world works in mysterious ways. What can I say? And sometimes those ways are delivered to you on a silver platter at 5 minutes until midnight, literally. They're about to let him go because they don't have a choice. Well, during the time of all this, the few days that this went on, DNA legislation in Canada had changed, right? These officers would draft the very first DNA warrant in Canada. It had never been done before. So this was groundbreaking. This was a groundbreaking case in the sense that they could, via warrant, he had to surrender his DNA.
Oh, good.
He didn't get to choose.
Great.
It's shocking, right? Thank you. Sometimes things are just meant to work out. That's all I can say about that. So a judge granted permission for them to take DNA samples from Murray Lyons. All they needed to do now was show that the DNA found on Jackie and the DNA extracted from Murray Lyons were one and the same, except one problem. The DNA found on Jackie was not usable. Her little body laid in the wet dirt for 2 days, and it was contaminated. The DNA that they found could not be used. It couldn't be traced to someone.
Right. It was inconclusive, probably, or just not enough, or too degraded.
And different time. I mean, this was 85. This was really was at the beginning of all this, right? So without a confession and with no DNA evidence to tie him to the rape and murder of little Jackie Clark, they're stuck. They're going to lose the case. They need to come up with something else. Now, as they often do, they use the media. I mean, I think investigators, detectives, and things like that hate the media a lot of times, but I think sometimes you use them to your advantage. So they wanted his picture splashed all over the news. The idea was that they wanted everyone in the community to see it because they had realized, or they had guessed, I guess, that at his age, as old as he was, you know, he was up there in age, like late 30s, early 40s, that this...
That's so old.
Point being for this kind of...
No, I know.
Perpetrator, right?
And to just have it done as a one-off.
Thank you. That mm-hmm. was the whole idea. They're right. like, there's no way that Jackie Clark was his first. So right. that's what they were hoping for. So they run the story. They want somebody to come forward. And they were really hoping that somebody would come forward.
Well, I'm hoping somebody comes forward too.
Jen, that is just what happened. But it wasn't just one person that came in, but two young women.
Mm.
I would say like teenagers.
Really?
Both of the young women would share their stories with officers, and both these stories would be very similar to Jackie's. They said that they were walking around the area, not even the woods, like in town, and all of a sudden, this guy pulled up beside them and asked, hey, you want to ride? Because I know I live right over there, and I know that, you know, you want to get home, and I'm going to help you get home faster. So once he would cut through the woods, he stopped and pretended like something was wrong with the ATV. He then raped each of the girls. He then hopped on his bike and told them, this really pissed me off for some reason.
And they were both together, too?
No, right? Separately.
Separately,
these are two different
okay.
stories. Yeah, sorry, I okay. should have made that clear. He then hopped on his bike and told them they were on their own to walk home. Now, what he claimed he did to Jackie, leaving her on her own, was exactly what he did to those other two girls. Mm-hmm. Jackie was number three. Now, they were lucky to survive and live and tell the story. Now, how old were these two girls when Murray Lyons offered them a ride and then raped them? You want to guess?
16.
They were both 8 years old, just like Jackie.
Really?
Yep.
Bastard. So he's got a...
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So armed with these two people that said they were the victims of Murray Lyons, police now get another crack at talking to him to get what they need. They needed a confession about murdering Jackie Clark. So they're going to have one chance, and they know they can't mess it up. So they call in the big guns, or gun. So Sergeant Richard reached out to Dr. Robert D. Keppel, who knew a thing or two about getting confessions from killers. You see, Dr. Keppel would tell the officer that there's only one sure way to get him to confess, and that was to blame Jackie. To blame Jackie for what was happened to her. Uh-huh. That Jackie was responsible for her own death because she was the one who took the ride from the stranger. She did it to herself at age 8.
Uh-huh.
To get into the mind of the sick and twisted, well, that requires you to think like the sick and twisted, right? By police claiming that it was not all Murray Lyons' fault, that it was these girls' fault too, right? It would connect him with the officers, you know, making him seem like having the officer kind of, I got you, you know, I got right. you, I understand kind of that thing, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah. I know it works, but it always makes me so angry yep. when, like, when you see on the TV shows, that's how they played it. It always pisses me off so badly, but I understand that they have to do it, but it still just irks me.
And that is a perfect segue, so thank you.
Uh-huh.
So Sergeant Richard was not too happy at all about this idea. He didn't even know if he could do it, pretending or not. There was a little girl, and even act like he could or would think this was something he didn't know if he could pull off. So Dr. Kleppel was like, listen, I'm telling you, this is how you have to do it, and if you don't think you can do it, you need to find somebody who can. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really distraught about this. He does not want to do this. Then we think, did this Dr. Keppel even know what he was talking about? Seems so, Jen. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
So Jen, Robert Keppel's career began as a detective. You see, he was kind of getting in on this case regarding some witnesses that said a man by the name of Ted had talked to two young women, and those women had later went missing. So during this investigation, Dr. Keppel narrowed down a large list of suspects, and he was left with 25, including a man by the name of Ted Bundy. He confronted Ted Bundy, and Bundy dismissed it, no, whatever, but Dr. Keppel could speak with him again. So Bundy had already been arrested and he was already in custody. So Dr. Keppel was the one who had went in and talked to Ted Bundy and investigated those things. He was able to get a lot of information from him about how he operated and things like that.
Interesting.
So after moving on from the Ted Bundy murders, Dr. Keppel went back, returned to school, got his doctorate at the University of Washington. And he took a position of the chief investigator for the Washington State Attorney General's office. In this position, Jen, he investigated other little crimes like, the Green River Task Force.
Gary Ridgway.
Yep. You know, he kind of knows his stuff is my point. So he's basically saying, you know, whatever.
This is what works. Yeah.
And as a side note, Dr. Keppel is also the author of The River Man, Ted Bundy and I Hunt for the Green River Killer, which was also made into a made-for-TV movie by the same name in 2004, starring Bruce Greenwood.
I don't think I know the Bruce Greenwood.
Yes, you do. He married Melissa Gilbert for a while.
Oh.
And then Carrie Elways as Bundy.
No. Yeah. No, I don't know him. I wouldn't have been able.
Yes, you do. He's a made-for-TV movie. He's all over the place. He's a good-looking guy, but totally TV guy. So as I said earlier, Sergeant Mike was really struggling with what he needed to do, but he knew he had to do it. He was really worried about what people would say. He didn't, you know, and I get it. He didn't want people to ever think that he thought this, right?
Yeah. No, I totally get it. And it's back in the time where it's not as common as before.
Exactly.
Yeah, I totally get it.
So before the beginning of the interrogation interview, knowing what he was going to say and do, he knew he had to do it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So at the beginning of the interrogation interview, he makes a statement to the camera. He wants the video recorder because they're going to record the interview with Marie Lyons. And he was like, you know, listen, I know what I'm about to say. It's gross. It's disgusting. It is not at all what I feel. I would never, ever blame a little girl for this, but I know I need to do it to get the confession. And it was interesting in the sense because I guess he had enough media savvy to know that this could be pulled out later,
chopped up. Him.
Yeah, this is at the beginning of cable television and things like that. Because I actually found the video of him in the room. And he's like, listen, this is what I'm going to do and blah, blah, blah. Which I thought was really kind of unusual and media savvy for the mid-80s. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So Murray Lyons enters the interrogation room. And just like a picture, this is the way I put this in my head. And I swear to God, I did make this up, but it's true. But just like a pitcher in a baseball game is getting ready to do what he needs to do to get the batter out. You're kind of like, you know, getting them warmed up and all that stuff. Sergeant Richard, he's got a game plan. He's going to wind up, serve the pitch, and hope that Murray swings and misses, right? So he's got a couple little things, and all he has to do is kind of line his ducks up in a row. So first of all, he tells him, this is him getting to know him, right? You know, most pedophiles have been abused when they were young. They grew up with this. It happened to them before they could even grow up and realize it's wrong. And so with this happening, how old were you, Murray? How old were you when someone first touched you? Bada bing. Now, this is after hours of like talking to him too, right?
Right.
Like, getting him there.
Yeah, that wasn't like the opening. Hey, Murray, how old are you? Where did he touch you? Yeah.
So Murray Lyons says, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old. Bam. That's number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second, they did this to you. You know that. These young girls, they're out there and they're just walking around. This is me like saying, he didn't really say this. This is like me. I condensed it all to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, these young girls are out there. They're walking around in their inappropriate clothing, acting the way they are. I mean, they kind of did it to you. They kind of brought it on themselves. And, you know, honestly, I bet they even kind of liked it. They consented to it, right? Like they told you it was okay after, you know, a while. Murray says, they never said anything. Bam. Well, actually, he said they never said nothing, but I said anything.
The grammar.
English teacher.
Yeah.
Bam, that's two. So he's already saying that they did not consent to this, right? And here we come with number three, right? With all of him warming up, I guess, and kind of letting his shield down, kind of, you know, giving the officers information, they need to bring it back around to Jackie, okay? So Sergeant Richard says, you know, I bet Jackie was the same as these other two girls, right? I mean, she hopped on your ATV like she knew you for her whole life. Her friends knew better than to take a ride with you, a stranger. But Jackie didn't, did she? Where'd you take her, Murray? By the culvert or was it by the stream? Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those spots. Bam. That's number three, and that's all they need to know, right? Police ask him directly, you need to take us to where Jackie's body is. We already know you did this. You've pretty much said it. So they go out, they take him to the location, and he's a portly little blech. So once they're there, Sergeant Richard digs in, and I found this tape too, right? And he's saying all these things. He's keeping up with this big act to get Marie to crack, because he's like, we want to know where her body is. We want you to say it. There's a camera on you. We need you to say it, right? Here you are, Murray, in these woods with these young girls just teasing you and tempting you. I understand that it's really their fault. Jackie should have not got on your ATV. She did that. But she started screaming, didn't she? The others didn't scream, did they? She did. And well, that's what happened. That's what drove you to kill her. Am I right? How did you do it, Murray? How did you do it? Now, this is legit on the thing. Like, it's on the video.
Right.
And he's really quiet because he's a freaking coward, of course. And he says, because they didn't know at this time, like they knew she was strangled, but they didn't know with what. They didn't have anything. And he says, with the bungee cord from my ATV. So that was it. Murray Lyons confessed to the rape and murder of 8-year-old Jackie Clark. As Sergeant, how creepy is this? And this is, sometimes you think that this isn't important, but I guess maybe it is. Sergeant Richard, my next future fifth husband, is almost in tears. Like you can see it in the video. He's like, oh my God, like this is heartbreaking, right? And as he's leading Murray Lyons out of the woods, he asks Murray, was there anything that Jackie could have done that would have prevented this, would have prevented all this? Murray said, yeah, not bother talking to strangers. That gave me the chills. Because that's legit. Like she was with two other kids, you know what I mean? But she was a nice kid, and I'm sure you don't think that.
He's a bastard.
So in 1996, Murray Lyons was convicted of first-degree murder, and he would get a life sentence with a chance of parole at 25. That's because Canada is different than us, remember? Remember earlier, Jen, I said sometimes the world works in mysterious ways, and sometimes you just need something to come in when you need it? In 1999, Murray Lyons was murdered by another prison inmate, so he's gone.
Well, pedophiles are the worst ones, right? They're the ones that get the brunt of everything. Not sad about it at all.
Yep. Terrible, right?
Yeah, that poor baby.
So this
girl.
Was a little, like I said, this was, I don't know, we've talked about like with the quarantine and stuff and just not having a lot of get up and go, shall we say. So it was hard. And like I did cry, there's a part of this that I left out that was just really heartbreaking and I couldn't say it because I knew if I had to say it, I'd cry because it was terrible. We'll put the video of Sergeant Richard and cute little pictures of Jackie on the blog for you to check out because it's, you know.
That bastard, I mean, he ruined those poor girls' lives. He ruined his wife. He ruined so much devastation's left behind from that one man. It's
yeah. How many lives are ruined, you know?
Too many. Way too many.
We've talked about, like, a lot of times, and this is sick, twisted thinking, hang with me, that a lot of pedophiles, you know, like they have the NAMBLA and all that. And we're not hurting anybody. We're just doing what feels good, whatever. But I think the thing that is different about that, like it's a you pay for that for the rest of your life. The victim pays
the victim
for that
does.
For the rest of their life. You know what I mean? Like it is so far from victimless crime. I don't even know what to say. It's almost a prison that you're sentenced to. And there's a reason that those that have been abused go on to abuse. You know, it is a cycle. It keeps going. It keeps going because it's not normal. It's not normal. It's not. It's heartbreaking.
I don't even have the words. I get so.
So that's it, Jen.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's hopefully. Well, thank you, Detective Richard. That you're awesome. I know that had to have been tough to do because I don't know if I could do it, but I would have felt the same way he did, as we know.
Yeah, terrible. He was young. He was a young guy. This was like. He's not even that old now. Like, he's probably our age now. And this happened way back. Well, I guess he's got to be a little bit older than us because if he was a detective in 85, but not that much older than us. Let's put it that way. Right.
Besides true crime, are you watching anything? Have you watched any good movies?
I know I've you watched have. Everything, Jen. Every single thing out there that there is to watch, I've watched everything. I mean, I've watched.
Did you watch Troop Zero yet?
I've not watched that yet because I have to be in that movie.
Then you're a liar. Then you're a dirty, dirty liar.
Okay, I watched Little Women today, which I thought was good.
I love Little Women.
The new one, though. The brand new one.
No, I know. I love that story.
Oh, okay.
I read that in eighth grade, and I'll never forget. I was taking a test, and I brought my copy of Little Women in. And, you know, they had those little desks, you know, just like little arm.
tiny ones, yeah.
So I was sitting there, and I was taking the test along with everybody in the math test, and I accidentally pushed the book. It was a hardcover, and it was really thick.
Boom!
And right? It was in the middle of the math test, and it fell off my desk, and the entire class jumped. And that was the first and only time I blushed. I was so embarrassed that that happened. Yeah. What else did we watch? I want to see the Jojo Rabbit one. I want to watch 1917. Haven't seen that yet. So since it's the weekend and it's gonna
what you got plans? Oh wait, you don't because we don't. Yeah,
I always have plans. They in my head.
I'm just saying, like, because we can't go anywhere.
No, I know. I know. All right. So all
right, well, Jen, I hope this quarantine is keeping you guys happy.
All right,
Jen. Guess
wanna
what?
Close
guess
it
what?
Up? What?
Yep. Remember, lock your doors and wash your hands.
And don't touch your face, but pass by those open windows.
Say bye-bye, but only from about a 12-foot distance.
And just remember, we love you.
That's true.
See, you always got to have the last word.
Bye-bye.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
I'm scrolling. Hold on.
Scrolling, scrolling, scrolling.
Scrolling. Keep them doggies rolling. Scroll. Move them up. Sorry. So there's a tip that comes in. And
it's always just
is,
the tip.
Right? Just the tip. I hate you. So they're going to try this little tactic, the old bluff it till you get what you want trick. They tell him that
it's kind of how we do this podcast.
Thank you.
Well, I'm hoping somebody comes forward too, but I'm thinking they probably do since we're hearing about the story, but I'm still going to be surprised.
It's like we're magic. I tell you,
magic.
Cut that out, Nico.
It's all an illusion.
So armed with these two people that said they were the victims of Marie Lyons, police now get another crack at talking to him to get what they need, which is a confession about murdering Jackie Chan.
Damn it. You just broke the news. Everybody's going to be dead.
Damn it.
Upset.
I'm sorry.
Poor Jackie Chan. So that you still have some hope.
I do have hope. Yes. That's what I'm getting around to, Jenny. Yeah.
Good.
He lives in Canada. I live here. Okay. But
we can make it work.
He's retired now. Mm-hmm. Call me.
Well, and you're tired, so that works.
It's great.
He's retired
great.
And you're tired. It totally works out.
Always. Okay, just to leave you on this last note, I got a text from my daughter. You ready? Hey, we're going to restart tomorrow morning and go on a hike, but it actually needs to happen, okay? Well, thanks, Tess.
Oh, we
honey.
Are? Are we
yeah.
are? Well,
yeah,
you guys
are.
Can do it now. It's 4:00.
We've been recording for 4 hours. We started, it was a little bit after whatever.
Noon.
Whatever. And I'd rather take the dog. She needs some energy.